Parashat Yitro is telling us about an interesting character, and a whole parasha is dedicated to this fellow character, Yitro, who was a follower of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, let's go back a little bit to understand better who exactly was this person, Yitro. Let's just get this. And in today's class, ladies, we're going to be talking about two factors. One is the Parsha, and one is also about Tu B'Shvat. Right now in Eretz Israel, we are already in and celebrating Tu B'Shvat here, and you're going to in out of Israel, you know, in the other side of the world, you guys are going to have soon tonight. You're going to have, but you guys also Tu B'Shvat. So we have some lessons about how to live better, how to improve our lives in almost every area. In almost every area of life, we have here a tool that can help us improve in. And when we think about, you know, the general things that people deal with in life, so generally, if you think about what people deal with, I'm trying to rack my head and say, okay, what is it that women are dealing with, women who are in this class? And I know that the general thing in life is that when people are dealing with things, so there's usually four things that people deal with in life, and those things can be annoying and people struggle with. And we call it an acronym. I call it Bechofesh, which in Hebrew means you're on vacation. But really it stands for Bechofesh. Is Bet stands for Bri'ut, which is health. So people can deal with health issues. People can deal with also, Chet could stand for Chinuch. So Chinuch issues, dealing with their children. And then there's Pei, stands for Parnasa. So people can be having Parnasa issues, financial problems. And then the fourth can be Shalom, which means relationships. So there's four areas where people can be dealing with in issues in life, and all these four are greatly affected by what we're going to be talking about in this class. We know that Yitro was originally one of the three advisors to Paro. He was a brilliant man, Yitro. He actually gave advice to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Hashem agreed to Yitro's advice that it was good advice. Imagine what it means to give advice to Moshe Rabbeinu. His daughter married Moshe. Now, Yitro had another two counterparts. He had with him as advisors, he had Bil'am, who was a sworn enemy to the Jewish people, who looked for the opportunity to curse the Jews. He knew when God gets that split second where God gets angry in the daytime, and Bil'am knew when that split second was. And he was going to curse the Jews in that time. And he was one of the three advisors to Paro. And the third advisor was Iyov. Iyov's job. Now Iyov also was one of the advisors to Paro. Now, we know that Iyov ended up leaving Egypt, going to the land of Israel, becoming extremely, extremely, extremely wealthy, and we know that he had a very, very hard test by God. The whole book of Iyov is the man who suffered from the most in the world. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Tractate Sanhedrin, teaches us on page 106a that these three advisors of Paro, they were standing when Paro said, "How? What do you think, you guys, about the idea that I should enslave the Jews?" And the response of Bil'am was, "Go sick him, go get them, enslave them, and this way they won't be able to, if another country tries to start up with us Egyptians, so the Jews won't join the enemy because they are going to be our slaves, they'll be subservient to us, and we won't have to be afraid of their super growth." And that was the idea of Bil'am, that the Jews should be enslaved. The second advisor, which was Iyov just kept quiet. So him keeping quiet seemed, as out of the three advisors, you have one person saying to do bad. The second one is saying not saying anything. And the third one was Bil'am. And Bil'am, so the third one was Yitro. And Yitro didn't not only not say bad, he didn't keep quiet, which is like keeping quiet is like you agree to the previous statement, but instead Yitro ran away. He ran to Midian. And the Gemara teaches us that each one, the Midrash teaches us that each one had its own reward or punishment. So Bil'am, because of his bad advice to do bad to the Jews, so he ended up having to be killed by the sword by the Jews towards the end of the Torah. And Iyov, who just kept quiet, so he ended up having to live a life of pain and suffering. And Yitro, who ran away to Midian, he ended up having that his great-grandchildren became great rabbis that sat in the Sanhedrin, sat in the great court, great assembly. And we know that years later, in the time when Bil'am was coming to curse the Jews, when the Jews were in the desert, before he came to the land of Israel, and he was hired by the countries that were afraid, and the countries that were living in Canaan, the civilizations that were in Canaan, they came to Bil'am that he should curse the Jews, that they shouldn't be able to come and take over the land of Israel. So Bil'am came to say his thing, do his thing, curse the Jews, and Hashem made a miracle that whatever he said turned into blessings. But one of the things that he said there is very interesting. He said, "Vayarta keni," and Bil'am saw the keni, and the keni is referring to Yitro, who is also one of his name is keni. So Bil'am saw Yitro, v'yisamesh lo v'yomar, and he raised his parable and he said, "Etan moshavecha v'sim basela kinecha." He said, "You settle with a stronghold," he told Yitro. Etan moshavecha. You settle with a stronghold. Visim basela kinecha. You put your nest in the rock. What do those words mean? That Yitro, you put your nest in the rock, and that you have a stronghold. So the Midrash explains this and says that Bil'am was very wondering. He was wondering, how is it possible that this guy, Yitro, who was one of the boys, he was a troublemaker just like the rest of us, the other three, like Bil'am and Iyov. And he ended up becoming able to be part of an amazing nation and be up right at there, up at the top with Moshe and Aharon. What did he do to merit that? Bil'am was blown away. What did Yitro do to merit this? And Bil'am said, you know what he did to merit this? He said, you have a stronghold because you put your nest in the rock. What does that mean? So the Midrash explains it to mean like this. Midrash brings a parable and says there was once a hunter, and the hunter caught this bird, and he was happy that he had the bird, but then suddenly the bird flew away, and the hunter ran after the bird, and the bird quickly flew and landed in the statue of the king. There must have been some type of statue of the king. And this replica of the king, this bust of the king, had like this hand. There's like this hand of the king that was in the statue of the king. And the bird landed there. Now the hunter knows that he can't throw a rock at the statue of the king to get the bird down. He can't, let's say, shoot at the statue of the king. He can't throw his net over the statue of the king. If he does it, he'll be killed. So he started to laugh. And they said, wow, what a smart bird. He knew exactly where to land. Because he's landing next to this statue, so I can't do anything to him. I can't catch him. And the Midrash says, that's exactly what Bil'am was saying over here. Yitro, do you know why Yitro merited to have such a merit of being up there with Moshe and Aharon and the great rabbis of the Jewish people? And he came, even though he came from the lowest of the low, he came to the highest of the high. What made him grow like that? What gave him that ability to reach such high, lofty position in life, even though he came from the bottom? And the answer is because he associated himself with good people. That's the answer. Because he made sure, like this bird who ran away, flew away from the clutches of the hunter, and went flying and landed into the statues, in the hand of the statue of the king. And by him being next to Moshe and Aaron, by him being next to these great people, that made him great, that made Yitro great. And we have to ask ourselves that question. In order to become great, people end up focusing, whether it's talking about great in health, great in chinuch, great in parnasah, great in shalom, great in relationships. It doesn't make a difference which area of life people are dealing with, but if you want to become great, we have to focus on the right question. There's always six questions to ask. Who, what, when, where, why, and how. And a lot of times people focus, when they have a problem with life, they focus on the what. What can we do? What are our options? What did I do wrong? Why is this happening? They focus on what? They focus on why. Or they focus on how. How can I change things? How can I do it better? And they forget to focus on the main question, which is the question of who. Who is involved? Who am I associating myself with? And if we just associate ourselves with the right people, so then things that we did not think about before suddenly change. This is such a deep concept of who we associate ourselves with, because it's going to affect every part of our life. We're going to talk about some self-help steps. We'll call them selfie steps. We're going to talk about them soon, but I first want to build up this concept here of Yitro and the fact that he's found that right safe haven by being there in the hands of this statue of the king, or associating himself with Moshe and Aaron, who like are part of the statue of the king, so that made him safe. So too also, by us associating ourselves with the right people, we could stay safe. My mother sent me this video in the email about some Eskimo. This Eskimo was saying over some type of story, some type of fable, that's a fable of the Eskimos, if you want to call it. There was once a young boy who asked his father, what is the value of his life? He asked his father, Dad, what's the value of my life? Interesting question. You know, we don't sometimes think this question, what's the value of my life? Instead of answering, the father told his son, take this rock I'm giving you and go sell it at the market. If anybody asks you the price, don't tell them anything. Just raise two fingers. Just raise two fingers. So the boy went to the market, and he asked. And while he was in the market, there's a woman there that came over to him and asked him, how much is the rock? So the boy, like his father told him, not to answer the question, but rather to raise two fingers. So he just rose two fingers. So the woman said, oh, wow, $2? The boy didn't say anything. And he just, you know, instead of she wanted to take it, but, you know, like his father said, just raise your fingers and don't sell it. So he took the rock and went back home. He told his father that a woman wanted to pay for $2. So the father said to the son, now I want you to take this rock and go to the museum. If anybody wants to buy the rock in the museum, don't say anything. Don't say even one word if they ask you how much it costs. All I want you to do is raise up two fingers. So the boy went to the museum, and a man came over, and he saw the rock, and he wanted to buy the rock. So he asked the boy, and the boy didn't say anything. He just picked up two fingers. He said, how much does it cost? And he sees the boy has two fingers up. So the man says, wow, $200, I'll take it. The boy was shocked that all of a sudden the price jumped from $2 to $200. So he took the rock, he went running back home. He told his father, he said, Dad, they just offered for this rock $200. The father said, son, the last place I want you to go with this rock is, I want you to take this rock to a precious stone store where they sell precious stones. Show it to the owner. Don't say a word. When he asks you how much it costs, what it is, just raise two fingers. So that's what the son did. He took the stone. He went to this precious stone store. He showed it to the rock. He showed the rock to the owner. And the owner said, wow, did you get this stone from? I never saw a stone like this. I gotta have this stone. He said, how much does it cost? So the boy raised two fingers. And the man said, the store owner said, $200,000? No problem, you got it. The boy was shocked. He took the rock, he ran out of the store, he ran back home, he told his father, he said, you know what happened? I was at the precious stone store, the guy wanted $200,000 for it, to offer. So the father said, don't you see what I'm trying to show you? Don't you get the lesson here? He said, the value of your life, it doesn't matter really how much money the family you came from, how much money you have in the family you came from. It's not about what type of past you have, that's your value, or the mistakes that you make, that's not going to make your value less. Your value is according to the people that you are around, the background that you have, your value around you. That's going to decide how precious you are. By the perspective that other people give you and the perspective that you have of yourself. What an important lesson about why we have to be around the right people. Because when you're around the right people, so all of a sudden you learn to value things that you wouldn't have valued otherwise. Like the very fact that you're alive. There's a beautiful thing that we sometimes forget to celebrate. The celebrating life itself. There are certain things that we forget about in life to value. There are certain things in life we forget about thinking about. And we're going to talk about each one soon, about these important factors of being able to grow. There was a story that happened that there was once a Jew and an Arab that they lived next door to each other in some type of duplex. And the Jew one day decided he had to sell his house. So the Jew first, he went and got grade A materials. He got grade A designers. And he got grade A workers to come in to renovate his whole house. And the Arab saw that the Jew was doing all this renovation, so the Arab said he's also going to do it. And instead of doing everything grade A, like a good Arab, he decided to do everything grade B. So he got grade B designers, grade B materials, and grade B workers. And then when the renovations were done, the Jew puts up a for sale sign and the Arab puts up a for sale sign. And one day when the Jew's coming home, he bumps into the Arab who's leaving his house. And he says, oh, how is it going? Did you sell your house yet? The Arab said, yeah, I sold my house. Did you sell your house yet? Did you say, I sold my house. So the Arab said to the Jew, he says, how much did you sell your house for? The Jew said, I sold my house for $600,000. The Arab says, oh, really? The Jew says to the Arab, how much did you sell your house for, once you're asking? The Arab said, I sold my house for $750. He says, what? The Jew says, I sold my house for $600. I had grade A materials, and I was only able to get $600. With grade A materials, grade A designers, grade A workers, and here you have grade B everything, and you got $750. How do you explain that? The Arab said, it's very simple. He said, when you sold your house, so your neighbor was an Arab. And when I sold my house, the neighbor's a Jew. And sometimes we don't realize that those things are factors that affect us, just the neighbors. We just think about what we're doing and the what and the where and the materials and but we forget about the who. Is who are we surrounded by? And those things can affect sometimes the most important thing, especially the value that we have of ourselves. So when we want to go and first know about how to change and have a great life, the first thing is to be surrounding ourselves by those people who are going to give us that value and make us feel good with ourselves and help us to value the right things in life. And we're going to talk about exactly how that plays out. So before we go on, anybody want to get involved and say if they any comments on what we said so far? Before we go on, just 1 second. And that's exactly what the Pasuk says. It says about Vayishma Yitro Kohen Midyan Choten Moshe Et Kol Asher Asa Elokim. And Yitro heard all that Hashem did to the Jews. And Rashi says, Ma Shmi'a Shama'uba. What was this news that Yitro heard from about the Jewish people that he heard and he came? Now it sounds like that the fact that Yitro came was an important stress in Rashi. Why does Rashi have to mention that Yitro came after he heard? I mean, let's say Yitro would have heard all the great things of the Jews and he just changed where he was in Midian. What is the focus and stressing point of here is that Yitro had to come to the Jews in the desert and leave his home in order to come and to be a part and to convert. Why does it mention the fact that he came? And here's the main point here is that we want to mention here, is that if you really want to change, you got to be associated with those good people. You can't really change by yourself. You got to have a good surrounding, change your surroundings, change the who's, in order for us to be able to have a different value system, to have a different ethical system. So if anybody wants to get involved, please do, if you can. *6, and you'll be able to unmute yourself.
Rabbi Farhi?
Yes.
What comes to mind is the shluchim from Chabad, for example.
Yes.
They go into like a wilderness of an environment. So mm-hmm. Is it because they've been Hashem gave them the merit and the extra chus to do that kind of work? It's not for everybody, and so that's why they don't have to be surrounded by such amazing people.
Ooh, you are asking a very tough question. You're asking about people going into Kiruv and they have to deal with people that might bring them down. And how do you do that when you know that, you know, and this is a big issue, is that when a person does Kiruv, he has to be sure and positive that it doesn't go the other way around as well. That when you're doing Kiruv, you have to make sure that the people you're being Makarv don't end up being Makarv you to their way. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly my point, yes.
Yeah, you have to make sure that, I mean, there are people in all types of parts of Judaism that are doing good and people that are parts of Judaism that are not doing good. So just because there are a lot of shluchim doesn't mean that they're all doing the job right.
Mm.
Of course, it's a great thing to bring godliness to the world, but you have to make sure that you're going to be yourself strong and not be influenced by those people. I mean, one time when I was speaking to somebody who's in Kiruv, and we were talking about, I was telling him that I was asking a certain person's counsel, and he was like, oh my goodness, what are we going to do when the coach himself needs a coach?
Yeah.
He's like, you know, you're going and asking advice, you know, what are we going to do if the coach himself needs a coach? There's a person who's a big person in Kiruv. So I said back to him, he says, I don't know, what are we going to do when the person who is in Kiruv, we have to be makar of him? He says, what are we going to do then? You know, because sometimes people go to Kiruv, they start losing themselves in what's considered being a from Torah Jew. So we need to make sure that even if we are going out of our, you know, from environments, that it's not going to affect us. And it's a very, very hard thing to do. The really only way for that to happen is that those people who are out there in their own environments, they have consistently a rav that's guiding them.
Right.
People who don't have a rav can really fall far. And that's one condition. Another condition is that they are constantly working on their own growth. If their whole day is just busy trying to bring up others but not working on their own growth, so then the people that they're trying to bring up can bring them down.
Okay.
Okay. But thank you very much for bringing that up. Okay. So, well, right now, I would like to talk about something that we see in another factor here about Yitro. We see that Yitro was, I mean, it's a little bit of a sidetrack for a second, but I want to just mention this because it's going to be a good connection to the next point. As we mentioned earlier, the Gemara talks about those three advisors, and we know that Job, he got suffering, while Bil'am got a penalty of death. Why is it that Bil'am gets the penalty of death? And he was the bad guy here by saying that the Jews should be killed and suffered and enslaved. And he, while he's getting death, Iyov, Job, instead of, he was quiet, job, what does he get as his punishment? He gets a life of suffering. What's worse, a life of suffering or being killed by the sword, like Balaam was killed by the sword? It seems to be that life of suffering of Yov was much worse, and for his keeping quiet. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz explains here is that the value of life, even if it's a life of suffering, has such a great value. And to celebrate that idea itself, this is celebrating the idea of life itself. And that Iyov, who was a person who kept quiet in the situation where Bilam spoke out against the Jews, so Iyov got that punishment of having a life of suffering, but at least he had life, while Bilam had to be killed by the sword, and that was going to be his punishment. Death is, of course, a greater punishment than the punishment of life with suffering. And the reason for that is because when you have a person who has life, so he has choice. He has potential. And we're going to discuss now the ideas of that, how that connects to a person. We know that a person is considered, like the Torah teaches us, Ki ha'adam etz sadeh. It's a pasuk in Devarim on chapter 20, pasuk 19, that a man is like the tree of the field. And on Tu B'Shvat, we celebrate, it's the holiday for the trees, and that means to say that today is a day when it's a Rosh Hashanah for the trees, and in regards to the laws of Olah, Olah is the 3 years that first three years of a fruit tree, that the fruits you can't eat for the first 3 years. That's why in this parallel between a man and the tree, we don't cut the hair of children, boys, the minhag, not to cut the hair until the age 3, because Ha'adam etz sadeh, a man is like the field of the tree, and just like the Torah forbids eating the olah, the fruits of the tree, for the first 3 years, we also don't cut the hair for the first 3 years. And the holiday of Tu B'Shvat is the holiday of the birthday of the trees. So in regard to the laws of olah, that means to say that it's considered like they filled up a year just by having even, let's say, for 1 month passed. Let's say they planted a tree a month, a little bit more over a month ago, so then today by Tu B'Shvat, it's already considered, even though it's only 1 month past, it's considered like they had a whole year, that it's already past its first year. So Tu B'Shvat is the cutoff date for the laws of Orlah, or other laws of regarding the fruits in land of Israel, of Maaser and Tithing and that type of thing. So the laws of Tu B'Shvat is interesting. It's one of the things that we have on Tu B'Shvat is we don't say Tachnun on Tu B'Shvat. In other words, we really celebrate. It's considered a Yom Tov in different ways. And we have to understand, why is it considered now when there's no fruits on the tree? Why is it considered that if there's no fruits on the tree, why do we celebrate the holiday of Tu B'Shvat if there's no fruits yet on the tree? It seems to be that it would make more sense to celebrate the birthday of the tree, not in a time when the tree is rare, has nothing on it, when it's bare. Now, let's try to understand here how, let's do this parallel of Ki Ha'adam Etz Sadeh, that the man is like the field, the man is like the tree in the field. What does that mean? What's this parallel? So, there's a lot of self-help, selfie steps here that I would like to get involved in, so please bear with me. Okay, the secrets of life success can be compared and learned from a tree. And this is a great analogy, and I would like to expound on it, and maybe people could use this for their everyday life. Okay? The idea is the idea that I call P3. P3. And that is that successful people, they do this P3 model, which means they project. They project and they plan ahead. Successful people, they plan ahead. They project into the future. That means is most people, they overestimate what they could produce in a year, and they underestimate what they can accomplish in 5 years. So proper projection, when you're able to project a long term, something that's long term, so then you are able to maximize the bigger 5-year goal. When I coach somebody, I usually want to know, like, what's a 5-year goal? some people call it like a blue sky goal. But first, I want to know what would be great for you in 5 years. Some people can't think of a 5 year goal, but sometimes you go back down to three. But we try to have a projection, somewhat of projection, so we're able to get the person to look at something from a new light and see where he wants to go. And by bringing him how things could look in 5 years, then we could start working each and every day attempting what we can do to get towards that new goal. And that goal that we're talking about, of the five-year goal that a person might have, that could be like his fruits, if you want to call it. Okay, so we want to know that's the fruits of his labor. So we want to know, what type of life do you want to have in 5 years? So that, according to the product, the fruits that you want, according to how you project what your product you want to be of the 5 years, so then you know, according to that, now you know where to plant your seeds. You know, we say, there's a rule in, you know, if somebody asks you, you know, when is the best time to plant a tree? The answer to that question is 20 years ago. When is the second best time to plant a tree? The answer is now. You see, you can't plant a tree and expect something to happen right away. It's obviously a long-term thing. You need what we're going to get to now, which is the patience, is the second P that we need. The third P, but we're going to leave patience for a second. Let's go to the second P is potential. Okay? The successful people are aware of the potential. Now, I just want you to be aware of these three P's so far. The first one is project, to project what you want in a long term. The second one is potential. And the third one is patience. These are the three P's that people need to become great. And all these three P's are all things that are going to be dependent on the people that you're around. Like we saw by Yitro, that because he was around Moshe Aaron, he became great. How did that happen? Because when you're around the right people, so you recognize, A, your potential, what could be in 5 years from now. You recognize your potential. And thirdly, you recognize the idea of how to have patience. And when you're around people who don't have patience, you can't be patient. When you're around people who don't project, so you won't project. When you're around people who don't realize potential, so then you don't end up having potential. So what's the second P? The second P is potential. And that P is, we have to know about Adam. Adam, why was Adam called Adam? So there's two reasons why Adam was called Adam. And it's the two ends of the spectrum of what a person is able to become. On the one hand, the person is like Adam is from, because I was taken from the Adama. He was taken from the dirt, from the ground. We could ask ourselves, why is it that Adam is called Adam after the word of Adama, from the ground? Why out of all things would Adam say, isn't that somewhat degrading to call myself like Adam from the Adama, from the ground? But the idea here is that even the ground is something that has a lot of potential. Because in the ground, you can do amazing things. You can plant the most amazing trees. You can use the ground to make different types of, to build things, make concrete out of the dirt. There's so many things you can do from dirt, from ground, and that's what Adam is called, Adama, is because if you work it, if you realize its potential, you can have great things with that. On a higher level, on the other side of the spectrum, of what Adam also stands for and what it means, is Adam is from the word Adameh. Adam's name got his name when he was called all the animals, each one the name of its essence. He called himself Adam because he's saying Adameh, which means I will become similar to. And Adameh is referring to that Adam is saying, who is Adam trying to be similar to? He's trying to be similar to God. Adameh means I will be similar to God. So Adam has in it both ends of the spectrum. On one side of the spectrum is Adam, that he's from the Adama, from the ground. On the other side of the spectrum is Adam. It's in the word Adame, which means I will be great. I will be like God. I will be similar to God. So the idea of the man is like the tree of the field is that on the first level is projection. It's like the tree is that you have to project 20 years from now. So to a man, he's got to project, what does he want in 5 years? And only people who project become great. The second level here is potential, is that when you recognize the potential that you have, Like, you can recognize what I could do with Adam, so a person recognizes in himself also his potential, that's when he could become great. And this is the idea of Tu B'Shvat. Tu B'Shvat, the reason why we're celebrating, even though the trees are bare at this time, we're celebrating the idea of potential. Even though the trees don't have any fruits on it at this time, we're celebrating the idea that the tree now is ability to have fruits. We're celebrating the idea of this tree getting off all the past, the dead leaves, the deadness of it, and letting the past, the dead behind, and realizing the potential of what the future might bring. So that's the idea of Tu B'Shvat. And that's what we're right now, even though there's no fruits on the tree, we're celebrating the holiday with fruit. Because we're seeing from now how things can be so great in the future. And that's why we're not saying Tachanun. The third P here is the P of patience, that successful people have patience. That if you want to be able to grow something big in life, you're going to have patience for it. One of my favorite books by the Goyim is Brian Tracy's book, the name of the book is 21 Secrets of the Self-Made Millionaire. That was one of my favorite books. Another favorite book of Brian Tracy is How to Become a Millionaire in Your Own Way. So that's a great book. And over there I saw something that I think it's a true point. Okay, people have to understand this before going into business. And it takes 7 years to establish a business. Okay, I want this to be clear, what I heard from Brian Tracy, because I think it's a very important idea here that we have to bring into the class. It takes 7 years to establish a business. So the first 2 years, you lose money, you waste time on learning this new business. You have to be ready for that. The next 2 years, okay, what happens the next 2 years? So you have enough experience to know this market, where you're going to develop your own USP, your unique selling proposition. You're going to know who you are. You're going to know where you stay different, and then you're going to break even after the next 2 years. The 3 years after that, so we're already 4 years in, 3 years after that, then you start living comfortably as you pay back your debt of the first 4 years. After 7 years in the business, then you have enough experience that you need to reach the top 10% of your field. Once you get there, once you're top 10% of your field, then you start earning 20 to 30% more than the average worker in your field. Now, this is an interesting idea because any business that can be successfully built in a year or two will obviously have a flooded market of competition. But you want to be the top 10% of your field. So if you want to build a healthy business, you got to have that 7-year idea ahead of you. You have to have that patience in order to build anything, any healthy business. And this is very difficult for our generation because we are a microwave generation. We're a scatterbrained smartphone generation. And it's very hard for us to have this patience of just waiting for 7 years. People don't have patience for learning Torah. And the Gemara tells us that if somebody wants to know if he's going to be a Talmid Chacham, he has to go through, I think 5 years, 6 years, I think it says, or maybe 7 years, I'm not remembering right now, that Sadiq Katamar Yifrach, we compare it Sadiq to a Tamar, that the tree of the Tamar, how long it takes for the Tamar tree to grow and bear fruit. So if a person learns Torah for 7 years and doesn't see any fruits, then you know that he's not cut out to be a learning guy and he's got to go to work. That's, of course, only once he learns the amount of years that it needed and he learns it in the right way. Most people are learning are not even learning the right way. But if he's learning the right way, so he's got 7 years to see and try this and have that patience. Because without having that patience, you can't be successful. Just like a tree, if you keep on pulling it out to check for the roots to see if it rooted, you're never going to have a tree. So you have to let it just sit. You have to let it grow. You can just cultivate it. But you can't build it in any other way. You can't let it grow in any other way. So this is the analogy that I want to bring from how a man is like a tree. In which way is a man like a tree? This is P3 model. And by us being around the right people, we're able to control these three P's. Ability to project, the ability to have patience, and the ability to also recognize our potential. There is one last thing I would like to connect to the idea of a tree and what we can learn from a tree. I remember when I was in teaching in Ramat Shlomo, so I remember that they cut off certain parts of different trees there, and they painted it with some type of blue paint, the parts that they cut off of the tree, the dead parts, or the parts that weren't growing well of the tree. They would cut it off, and they would paint it in a way that part was some type of a gluish paint. With the gluish paint, we make sure that that part would not take any more of the tree's sap that's coming up out of it. And I was wondering, why did they do this? Why did they take out the time for this? And I realized is that, you see, if a tree has the energy that's coming out of it and coming up through the roots and the sap that's coming through it, if it's going to go to the wrong places where places that are not effective, so then the growth of the tree is going to be stunted. It's not going to get to the highest potential that it could get to. So if you want something, a person to be successful, you have to realize that there's only a certain amount of things that we do that are really, really high return actions. You get really return, you know, high ROI, return on investment on those actions. We have only certain things that we do that's the real me. That's what I want to be. That's my, going to bring me towards my 5-year goal. And only those things that are those great things that are my life that I'm going to bring to me my 5-year goal, to my big idea that what I want to do, those things are going to have high ROI, return on investment. So I only want to spend my time on those things. If I'm going to spend my time on things that are not going to bring me to my big goal that I want in life, so then I'm going to take some of my energy that's going to be going to places that I don't want. So what we have to do is have to cut off those things and close those things off that they shouldn't take from my energy, so I will be able to grow and shoot up to the highest I can shoot up to. This was specifically very helpful for me when I was reading from one of Brian Tracy's books. And Brian Tracy says one of the ideas of doing an effective in business or in life is that we take out a piece of paper, a pen and piece of paper, and we start to write all the actions we do on an everyday basis. So I started to write down all the things that I do, and I started asking myself, if I had only one thing out of my entire list here that's going to bring me the closest to my 5-year goal, what would that thing be? And then circle that thing. And then if I have only one more thing that I do in my whole list here that's going to bring me to my highest ambition and goals, what would that one thing be? And I circled that second thing. And then I said, what's the third thing that is going to bring me to my highest thing? Out of all the things that I keep myself busy with, I mean, we only have, when we talk about managing our time, we have to remember that there's really the things that, there are actions, there's thoughts, and there's conversations. That's all we do in life. We have actions, thoughts, and conversations. So if we put down on the paper all the actions, all the thoughts, and the conversations, we just take out the best ones, and we just focus on those, we're going to get onto super speed towards our goals and our ambitions. So I took this idea after I read it, and I went out for a walk. I went to the Jerusalem forest. I did my meditation, my walk, and I started to think about, what are those three things? And I realized at the time that, you know, my biggest thing is that I'm not really doing as well as I can, is I'm not doing my learning courses. And I believe that my effective learning course is probably the best thing I could give to the world. So I stopped everything I was doing, and I just focused on just what do I need to do to get my effective learning course started up again. And Baruch Hashem, I started that up, and Baruch Hashem, I'm giving a course and another course, another course, and I'm spending my time just on this. I'm giving boys free time while they're taking the course, just to make sure they're learning how to implement the tools. And really, Baruch Hashem, my life changes from this one thing, from cutting out all those extra things that are not my main thing. We focus on just those things that are the biggest, highest ROI, like that tree that we saw in Ramat Shlomo that had cut off and they blocked off those things. I was able to realize what's going to be my highest ROI. So when we're around people who know how to value time, how to value their conversations, how to value their actions, how to value their thoughts, and to make sure these things are only the best that they've got, so we become these superhuman beings. That's when Bil'am sees Yitro there. He says, how did you get to be so great? There, when you hang around people like Moshe and Aharon, when you hang around angels, you become an angel. And that's the only way it happens. It only happens when we're around those right people. And that's how we're going to have an amazing life. If we connect to these things, we connect to those people that have those right values and are those people who are the three P's, we could become amazing. I just want to bring something here interesting. I just want to share with the class something from time management specialist Michael Fortino, an interesting study. He said, over an average lifetime, you will spend, the truth is, this is like, oh my gosh, this is like depressing. Okay, time management specialist Michael Fortino, okay, listen to this closely. You might even want to write it down. Over an average lifetime, you will spend 7 years in the bathroom. You will spend 6 years eating. You will spend 5 years waiting in lines. You will spend 4 years cleaning your home. Oh my gosh, don't say that. You will spend 3 years in meetings. You will spend 1 year searching for things. Ouch. You will spend eight months opening junk mail. You will spend 6 months sitting at red lights. You will spend 120 days brushing your teeth. Whether you believe what Michael is saying or you don't believe what he's saying, you will start to realize that there's so much time that slips through our fingers. We don't realize it. We spend it on the weirdest of things. So yes, the man is like a tree. Tu Bishvat was celebrating the man. And the Arizal tells us that there's a tremendous tikkun that we can do on Tu Bishvat. If we make the proper brachot, we make the proper seder, if we have the fruits and we make the proper blessings, we can pray today for a proper etrog on Sukkot. We can pray today, if we have an etrog that was honeyed or whatever, we could pray today for by doing the brachot, we could be metaken, the tikkun of the neshamot that are found in the pri, the fixing up the souls that are found in the pri, and we could really do a tikkun to the olam just by us connecting to these ideas, Be'ezat Hashem. So if anybody wants to get involved, now is the time.